Welcome to the Capital News. I am your host, Alex Caritas. Today is August 18th, 2019. Thank you so much for joining me. Hope all of you enjoyed your week, and this is our week ahead for the week of August 19th. So, I did not do a podcast on Friday, so real quickly, just to get over the headlines with the stock market, because it was a volatile week, to say the least. The S&P was up 1.4%, the Dow closed higher 1.2%, the NASDAQ gained 1.7%, and the Russell 2000, the small cap index, gained 2.2%. Now, a lot of this was off of the hopes that there are going to be more stimulus measures coming from China, coming from Germany, and coming from none other than the Federal Reserve here in the United States of America. Fantastic, folks. This is what we get. There is no real organic growth. It all has to be more debt. It all has to be borrowing from the future. This is theft from future generations to take care of all of the crybabies today. That's exactly what it is. Don't let anybody fool you. Don't let anybody ever tell you different. That's exactly what it is. We are robbing future generations blind. This is why millennials are suffering. This is why they have a difficult time finding jobs. This is why it's hard for them to buy houses. They can't even afford to pay for a down payment. And down payments are still minimal. They're still minimal. There's still no hard and fast rule that they have to put 20% down on house prices that continue to increase, by the way. So can't start families or having difficulty starting families, getting married, all that jazz. Wait for the younger generations. They're in hard times too. This is what debt does. It steals from future generations. Now, it's just all coming together. These debt chickens are coming home to roost. We can't have that though. We should, but we can't have that. Not in the political environment in which we live. No administration, whether it's in the United States of America or any other government for that matter, wants to take responsibility. There is no leadership on this planet right now. None. Zero. Goose egg. None. Can't stress this to you guys enough. We have a president of the United States who is obsessed with the stock market. He took ownership of the stock market like a fool. I don't know if this is his doing or if this is just terrible advice that he got from one of his economic advisors. But nevertheless, it's still the president's decision at the end of the day. So this is just beyond the pale stupid. There's no other way to put it. Nobody should take ownership of the stock market. It's not anybody's stock market to own. Not any individual. It's a marketplace. That means it's for everybody. And the job of the marketplace is to find fair value. Not to be manipulated with tweets and statements that everything's going fine in a trade war. Not to be manipulated by easy credit. Quantitative easing and lower interest rates, negative interest rates the world over. It's not how it's supposed to operate at all. If you can't see this, you're not paying attention. If you can't see this, you're ignorant. And that's okay to be ignorant. We're all ignorant on certain things, but you have to educate yourself. You can't just listen to a whole bunch of people in government. You can't listen to a whole bunch of politicians, including the President of the United States of America. I know he likes to say he's not a typical politician. But guess what? He's the new boss, same as the old boss. They cherry-pick data. They say, oh, everything's fine because we can look at a couple one-off reports here or there. Not looking at the broader trend. Not looking at things in aggregate like we do here at the Capital News. Because nobody wants to take responsibility. If the president had done what I had suggested, he wouldn't be in this pickle. Because I think he's sweating. I think he's getting nervous because the economic data has been turning over, but now we just got the yield curve inversion on the 2-year and 10-year Treasury note. Okay? That's what we got. That's a recession signal. That's why the market sold off. That's why the Dow Jones Industrial Average sold off 800 points. What was it, on Wednesday? One day. You know, there were previous tweets and comments made by Donald J. Trump when he was a citizen of the United States, when he was just a civilian, I should say, that said any time the markets sell off like that, whoever's the president shouldn't be the president. So, you see, you got to be careful with what you say, how these things have a way of coming back around And Donald Trump speaks out of both sides of his mouth constantly, so he's always in a pickle. He's his own worst enemy. But if the president had taken my advice and did what he was elected to do, because I honestly believe his mandate was to drain the swamp. That's what it was. People were sick and tired of the status quo. And Hillary Clinton had status quo written all over her. And Donald Trump, not even close. He was the shake-up artist. He was the guy that could come in, roll up his sleeves, and get things done. That was the hope, because you had a lot of people who voted for President Barack Obama who crossed the line and voted for Donald Trump. I mean, that's crazy, right? In and of itself, that's nuts. Nobody would expect that to happen. But that tells you how bad the system is. That tells you how bad the economy was and continues to be. Were their numbers going in the trajectory that people would rather see them? Yeah. Unemployment numbers were headed in the right direction. We were at 10%. Now we're down at 3-point-whatever percent right now. We're bottoming out. We did a video on this. Check it out on thecapitalnews.com or on our YouTube channel, The Capital News. This is the data that we look at. Unemployment is a lagging indicator, but it tells you where you might be in the business cycle and where a recession is likely to take hold. And like we said in that video, look at unemployment when it bottoms out, and we believe that it has around 3.5, 3.6, 3.7%. Unemployment gives birth to a recession. So about 9 months from once it bottoms out, you're in recession 9 months thereafter. Now, that's just looking at the historical data, obviously. It's what it is. It's data. It's historical. It's what already happened. But we look at that in conjunction with a handful of other items. The yield curve. What's going on with the federal funds rate? That's the rate in which the Federal Reserve sets. Okay? And we're going to talk about that here shortly, too. But the president could have just said, my mandate is to drain the swamp. I'm not here to take ownership of this economy. It's not the president's job. I'm not here to take ownership of the stock market. That's not the president's job. But that's exactly what he did basically from day one. And when he was a candidate, one of the primary reasons that I voted for this guy, one, I could not stand Hillary Clinton. But two, and maybe even more importantly, Donald Trump was talking about how this economy was in a bubble, how the stock market was in a bubble, how the Federal Reserve was priming the pump and causing a huge wealth transfer from middle America to the upper echelons of the income bracket. He hit it right on the head. And I'm like, you know what? He doesn't talk about it all the time, but every once in a while, he throws it in there in an interview here and there. And I said, you know what? This guy might get it. He might actually be somebody who's, maybe he's a closet libertarian. I mean, that's what I am here. I state my case. I'm a libertarian. But, you know, maybe he gets it. Maybe he's going to do something. Now he's president. He's taken ownership of the economy, which is one thing. That's foolish in and of itself. But now he's taken ownership of the stock market. That makes him an idiot. There's no other word for it. Unless you're actually controlling or manipulating the market, which is a crime in and of itself on the other side of things, you'd have to be a complete idiot to want to take ownership of the stock market, which is comprised of millions of people placing their bets. Doesn't mean it's speculation, but going in and saying, oh, you know what? I think I'm going to be long the U.S. stock market, or maybe I'm going to be short the U.S. stock market. You should have no control over this as the president of the United States. None whatsoever. None. Cannot stress this to you guys enough. Yet here he is parading out there all the time, either on Twitter, in front of the press corps, the other day in New Hampshire in a campaign rally. He said, if you vote for the Democrats, the stock market, your 401k value is going to tank. Even if you love me, you hate me, you got to vote for me. That sounds like a man who's pretty desperate to me. Because it's not built off of policy differences in totality, because this president isn't doing much different than the old bosses. Okay, he cut some taxes. Did he cut spending? No, he didn't. Actually, he increased spending. He increased it. And now we have the debt ceiling going up. So we're going to have trillion-dollar deficits for the next 2 years at least. We were talking last week about the budget deficit is already greater now than what it was its entirety of last year. And we still got a month and a half to go. This is not fiscal conservative. This is not why I voted for Donald Trump. I voted for him to drain the swamp. You know what that means? You cut the spending. You downsize them. That's what you're supposed to do. But no, he's the king of debt, which he said he was. And that's what he's doing. He's continuing to pile more and more debt onto this country. Now it's just a game. Now it's just what silo, what team are you on? And now you're just digging in. You're not looking at it with a clear head. I mean, here's Donald Trump, here's the Democrats. What difference does it make? What difference does it make? Because I can guarantee you, to my conservatives, my fiscal conservatives, my Republicans out there who are listening, you were railing against Barack Obama and all of the debt that he added to this country. And rightly so. Are you criticizing Donald Trump? Because he's continuing at the same rate, if not greater. And I have to mind you that we are nearing the end of a business cycle expansion, meaning we are headed into recession, because recessions have not been outlawed. Okay? So when you go into a recession and fewer people are working, businesses close up or downsize, you're going to have fewer tax revenues coming in to the U.S. Treasury. Are they going to cut spending? Of course they're not. So that means your budget deficits are going higher. That means your national debt is going higher, that much higher, probably to the clip of $1.5, maybe $2 trillion per year, depending on the severity of the recession. And it's, if it's as bad as I think it is going to be, then it's going to be $2 trillion without a doubt. So we're already about $23 trillion, $22.5, getting closer and closer to $23 trillion as I speak. Okay? You tack on another $2 trillion, boom, like that, it's nothing. There's 25. How much more sustainable is this? With poor demographics in this country, poor demographics around many industrialized nations around the world, old people living on a fixed income, younger people who are just saddled with student debt in the midst of a recession. So what types of jobs are they going to be able to find? How many of these older people who have retired are going to have to come back into the workforce because the retirement accounts have sold off? These are serious questions. These are no joke. But nobody wants to tell you what's likely to happen. They just want to say everything's fine. Donald Trump just wants to come out and say, just vote for me and your 401k will continue to go up. What's sort of laughable on this point, and we talk about this here on a number of occasions because this is something that the president always talks about. Most Americans do not own stocks. Most Americans do not own financial assets. This is why there is so much income inequality in this country and around the world. That's why you have such a rise in political populism the world over. Ironically, this is one of the main reasons why Donald Trump became elected, because of the income inequality. Now, with Donald Trump continuing to prime the press and trying to get the Federal Reserve to cut interest rates, which they just did last month, to cut them even further, and no question to embark on another round of quantitative easing, all that's going to do is drive the income inequality gap that much further. That much further. It's not going to be good at all. At all, especially on fraudulent stimulus. More debt, more money printing out of thin air, more quantitative easing. These are not solutions. These are scam artists doing their bidding. This is what they do. This is what they've been doing for the past decade. This is not correlation. This is causation. Okay? Very important to understand this. There's no end in sight. A lot of these guys are now panicking, believe me when I tell you, because none of them want to come out and tell you the truth. None of them want to come out and tell you that economic numbers are rolling over. None of them want to tell you that the yield curve inversion actually is a very, very strong signal of a oncoming recession. Now, there's a gap. It's not like it's going to happen tomorrow, although there are some people who are arguing we're already in a recession. I'm not in that camp, but we're getting there, and I'm going to make my call on when we're likely to be in a recession once I'm done with a few more videos, because that's what this whole series is about, and then we'll continue on with some other figures. But nevertheless, Mr. President, just abandon this ownership of the stock market and abandon this ownership of the economy and just come in and say, look, you voted for me to drain the swamp. I'm going to roll my sleeves up and that's exactly what I'm going to do. And maybe the economy will do well under this transition period. Maybe it won't. But guess what? We have structural issues in this country that need to be resolved. Everybody was upset. Democrats, Republicans, Independents, Libertarians, everybody was upset, clearly, because they voted for Donald Trump. This is not an insult on Donald Trump. This is an insult on the system. Donald Trump is not the disease, he is the symptom of voting for Clinton and Bush and Obama. This is what happens when you have $20 trillion in debt. Now he comes in and he just keeps it going. This is what happens. But he could have came in. He could have said, those things are whatever. That's not the job. That's not the role of the president of the United States. We're going to drain the swamp. We're going to turn things around. We're going to tackle structural issues so we can set the next generations off onto a very good glide path. Because what we've given them is a recipe for disaster, a recipe to fail. And that's exactly what we're staring down. Are there still opportunities? Of course there are. There's always going to be opportunities to succeed, to make a living and for yourself and for your family. Don't get me wrong here. I am not pessimistic by nature. I'm an optimist by nature, but I'm also a realist. I used to be bullish on these markets, bullish on the economy. Now I'm not. I'm not, because the data tells me not to be bullish on the economy and on the markets. It's just not. But you can make money on the other side. But you have to be careful, especially in this environment, because we have a president that comes out trying to manipulate these markets. In fact, he is manipulating these markets, and he knows it, which I think warrants investigation, to be perfectly honest with you, because I believe it's an abuse of power. He's not your average Joe citizen who might give an interview somewhere here or there or talk about something or has a blog and they're saying something and markets react, whatever, it's one guy, no big deal. But when you're the president of the United States, people kind of hold that up there. You know what I'm saying? Your words carry a lot of weight. And when we know that the president is obsessed with the stock market to the degree that he is, of this there should be no question. If you have questions about this, look at his Twitter feed. Look at official statements from the White House. Look at his trade advisor, Peter Navarro. Look at his comments. Look at his economic advisor, Larry Kudlow. Look at his comments. Look at the comments from Wilbur Ross, the Secretary of Commerce. Look at the comments from Steven Mnuchin, Treasury Secretary. They're all out there. You have the market selling off, down for the day. Oh, somebody go out there and say everything's fine with the trade talks between the United States and China. And lo and behold, up goes the stock market. And then you have some times when the president over the weekend, he changes his mind. I just don't like this. President Xi is taking too long, even though we're not in any hurry. But he's taking too long, and we're going to slap China with more tariffs. And then the markets sell off. Let me tell you something, folks. You can make money buying long. You can make money selling short. Is the president lining his pockets with profits? Because he knows what he's going to tweet. Is he telling his children? Is he telling a friend of a friend? Somebody in the administration? These are serious questions. Because again, especially to my Republican friends out there, had this been Barack Obama, you'd be going ballistic. And don't tell me that you wouldn't be. This is the problem with divide and conquer. This is the problem with, well, he's my guy. I voted for him, therefore he can do no wrong. No, you got to get off of that. This country is more important than this. This is what we were warned about by our founding fathers 200 some years ago. Don't divide yourselves. Don't get involved with parties. Stay united as one people, as Americans. Well, we blew that one too, didn't we? We didn't listen to them for a very long time. We haven't. We have abandoned the principles and the values of this country. Long gone. Long gone, believe me when I tell you. But that's what we're facing right now. And now we have a White House that's somewhat in damage control because of the yield curve inversion, because of the market sell-off last week, even though there was a strong rally on Friday that we just talked about with gains of 1% or greater, even 2% on the Russell 2000. What's likely to transpire next week? Well, we'll get to that. But first, because there was obviously, this is Sunday, you had the Sunday morning political shows. I do not like watching these shows anymore. I used to. I still obviously consider myself a political junkie. I do this podcast. I like to focus more on the economic things, obviously, here. But nevertheless, it ties in with a lot of the politics. It has to, and it's going to. But I did catch some of Meet the Press with Chuck Todd. And I am no fan of Chuck Todd. I just think he shows too much of his true colors on that show. And I just think it's a disservice to some of the great moderators who are on there, particularly Tim Russert. But nevertheless, that's just my opinion of it. So I don't watch it too often because I don't care for Chuck Todd's analysis and comments and even a handful of the roundtable participants. It's just a show. It's a big cluster as far as I'm concerned. But nevertheless, I did catch some of it. And our buddy, Larry Kudlow, was on there. And he was there to do some damage control. And I do believe Peter Navarro was on some of the other stations. And I think Larry Kudlow was as well. But I only caught, again, Meet the Press. And Larry Kudlow was the first guest up. And they're talking about the stock market sell-off. The problem when you have a lot of political pundits such as Chuck Todd give these types of interviews, he's just not that sharp when it comes to the financial markets and the economic data. And that's fine. That's not a knock, again, on Chuck Todd. He has a whole host of other issues I can go after, but not the point of this discussion. He just doesn't know how to really stick it to these guys on these types of questions. Because Larry Kudlow is obviously going to come out prepared with some data, a couple of one-off statistics, and I think he cited last month's numbers when it came to U.S. retail sales, which was a stronger number based off of a number from the previous months that were very low. So you want to cherry-pick your data. This makes you no different than former and prior administrations. Again, no leadership, no accountability. Just pick what you want and go from there. Now, Chuck Todd, which is one of the great things about Meet the Press, is they go back in the archives and they look at what their guests have said in the past. And they pulled out a quote from Larry Kudlow in around 2007 that said, look, I don't believe in all of these pessimists and people saying that we're going into a recession. This is the sixth year of a business expansion under George W. Bush. We're going to continue going further. And then we all know what happened after that, the greatest recession. So it calls into question the forecasting ability of Larry Kudlow, who was a chief economic advisor for the President of the United States. Not too shabby. Pretty important position, you would think. What was Larry's response? Well, he owned up to it, so I got to give Larry credit for that. He said, yeah, you know what, I just didn't think it was going to happen. But then he says, well, a whole bunch of people were in my camp, too. A whole bunch of people didn't think we were going into recession. I mean, that's a bunch of crap. What are you getting paid for? This is your job. This is exactly what you get paid for. It's your job to find these turning points. That's exactly what you're supposed to do. You're not supposed to be a cheerleader for the economy. You're supposed to be an analyst. And if it's rolling over, you say it's rolling over. If it's going higher, you say it's going higher. But there is no way, if somebody was actually looking at that data at that time, that everything was A-OK. And then just to say, well, everybody else was doing it, what a cop-out. What a cop-out. But again, at least he took ownership for it and said he was wrong. And then he says after a little bit, okay, if some more data points came in, he changed his mind and he was on the recession bandwagon. All right, whatever. But one of the interesting things that Larry Kudlow said, because he didn't really talk about much, he was trying to drag out his answers, trying to sort of interrupt Chuck Todd when Chuck Todd was trying to get in and ask another question. Oh, wait, just wait another, just let me finish here, Chuck, 1 second. And, you know, it just took another 30 seconds of the time. He slow played it. Larry knows what he's doing. And he said, let's take this into consideration. And he said this a few times. He said, let's not be afraid of optimism. Let's not be afraid of optimism. That's the best he could do. If that's the best the chief economic advisor to the President of the United States can do when there are signs of recession coming, we're screwed. I mean, that's all he can say? Optimism doesn't pay the bills, Larry. It just doesn't pay the bills. And the other thing that gets me going on this, why do we fear recessions? And that's a title of one of our articles on thecapitalnews.com, and I ask you to check that out. Recessions are a healthy process. They're a healthy process. What we've experienced for the past 10 years has been very harmful to the system. It looks good. It feels good. You know, that's what drugs do to you. Messes with your mind, makes you feel like everything's fine until you start crashing down and then you need another hit. And that's why we use the example that low interest rates and quantitative easing is like drugs. That's why we say these addicts on Wall Street, they're looking for another hit. And that's why you had markets rallying on Friday. On Wednesday, they sell off 800 points. On Friday, they run up 1-2%, Because now, if everything's that bad, well, now the Federal Reserve has to come and save us. They have to come and save us. That's what we've been told for several months. Several months. And they cut interest rates 25 basis points, and yet markets, just a few weeks later, sold off 800 points. So how potent do you think these next rate cuts are going to be? I don't think they're going to be that potent. Now, that doesn't mean the idiots on Wall Street aren't going to just ride this thing up, but it's going to be a terrible, terrible crash on the way down because it's just going to distort things that much further. It's going to push people further and further out onto the risk curve. We shouldn't fear recessions. They're corrections. You shouldn't fear corrections. We need them. All of the malinvestment, it has to go away. The bad debts, they need to be liquidated. Will this cause pain? Sure, it will. Will people lose jobs? Absolutely. Absolutely. But you can't just keep this thing going. It's not how it works. You're supposed to want the most efficient and effective businesses in operation. We know that there are at least 6% non-financial companies in the United States, according to the Bank for International Settlements, which is the central bank for central banks out of Switzerland. That's their figure. That's a minimum of what we have in the United States. 6% non-financial companies are zombie corporations. That means they're walking around dead. That's what a zombie is. They're walking around dead. And when this comes down, these guys are gone, boom, like that, instantaneously. Last week, we did a podcast on GE, General Electric. This is a household name. Most people probably have a product in their house from General Electric. Okay, what was the talk about this? Because we had a forensic accountant, Harry Markopoulos, the forensic accountant who shed light on the Bernie Madoff $50 billion Ponzi scheme, come out and say that GE is fudging their numbers, cooking their books, and if history is any indication, they will be bankrupt in about 4 months. This is serious. Did you hear what I just said? I mean, this is no joke. This is no joke. Billions, tens of billions of dollars shortfall, according to Harry Markopoulos and his team of forensic accountants, are saying that GE has to come up with tens of billions of dollars. Almost $40 billion is what they have to come up with. It's just not going to happen overnight. It's just not. Now, could he be wrong? Sure, he could be. Sure, he could be. But he has to make a living, and this is how he makes a living. He takes these cases, he does his investigations, and he turns them over to government agencies, Securities and Exchange Commission, Department of Justice, and they'll look into it. And if they are awarded fines and taxes and penalties and all that stuff, then Harry Markopoulos and his team will get a percentage of that. Now, in this case, and just in case you have not heard that podcast from last week or have caught the news on this from last week, Harry Markopoulos is also working with an undisclosed hedge fund who has a short position on GE. So if you want to say, well, of course, then he's going to come out with this report and do this because he sets to profit. That's fair enough. I can't argue with that. He's going to have to answer for that how he wants to. But nevertheless, these documents were filed with the Securities and Exchange Commission, with the Department of Justice, and he's claiming that he has a few smoking guns that he has not disclosed to the public, that it's just been set aside for law enforcement because he didn't want to tip his hand entirely so that GE knew everything that they have found. Okay, so we're going to see. But, and just so you know, that 4 months figure of potentially being bankrupt, General Electric being bankrupt, comes from what happened when fraud was exposed at Enron and WorldCom. Okay, 4 months, boom, both of those companies out of business. Now, we'll see. Maybe he's wrong. Maybe GE's right. Maybe they're doing everything by the book. Maybe they don't have any concerns, and maybe they'll continue to go. But if Harry Markopoulos and his team are correct, and I have more reason to believe they're correct than not, because what a screwed-up system we live in, this will be it. This will be the catalyst that causes trust and confidence in the system to fall by the wayside. Because that's the same thing that happened with the collapse of Bear Stearns and the collapse of Lehman Brothers. Particularly Lehman Brothers, because Bear Stearns was absorbed by the federal government assisting J.P. Morgan. So they were sort of able to contain that. Once Lehman Brothers went, that was it. It was all trust and confidence. And the whole system is based off of trust and confidence. trust and confidence in people who are screwing over the system. Trust and confidence in Wall Street banks. Remember that? Privatized profits, socialized losses. That's where trust and confidence in this economy rests. Do you have a whole bunch of trust and confidence in these individuals and in these institutions and corporations? No, I don't. And if you do, shame on you. But that's exactly where this rests. And if you have a company, the size and scope of GE go down, this will reverberate throughout the entire global economy, not just the domestic economy, but the global economy. Household names will go out of business. I've been saying this for months. That's how bad I think this is going to be. Nobody thought Bear Stearns was going to go out of business 10 years ago. Nobody thought Lehman Brothers could fail, but they did. They're gone. Even AIG, a major insurer, would have went out of business if it wasn't for the Federal Reserve coming in to save them. And of course, when the Federal Reserve came in and saved them, a lot of the money that was given to AIG to bail them out then went to their counterparties, which were also major Wall Street banks, in case you forgot about that one. So they pushed the system to collapse. They still make their money. They get bailed out, and everybody else gets screwed. That's the system we're supposed to have trust and confidence in. So if GE goes down, make no mistake about it, this will be it. Because nobody's going to trust anybody else's books. Nobody else is going to trust, well, who's holding what paper where? That's what happened when Lehman Brothers went down. Who can we trust? It doesn't matter if the banks are well capitalized. They're not going to start giving out loans for charity. That's not what they're in the business of doing. They have to be responsible to their shareholders and their stakeholders. They're not just going to give money away to be nice. That's not what they do. Nor should they. That will seize up the capital markets, and that'll be it. That'll start the cascading effect. Everything we talk about here, everything will come to light. Everything will come to pass. A whole bunch of the junk bond market, triple B rated bonds, they'll be downgraded to junk, a lot of them. There'll be no liquidity. Don't know how else to put it. When there's no liquidity, it's it. It's game over. That's what happened a decade ago. It's what's going to happen here. Except I think it's going to be on a much larger scale. And it was terrible 10 years ago. I could be wrong. Maybe everything will be peachy. Maybe the Federal Reserve will get everything right. Maybe the European Central Bank will get everything right. Maybe the Chinese will solve the Rubik's Cube. Maybe the Japanese will solve it. Maybe everything's going to be fine. That'll be the first time that's ever happened. But we'll see what happens, won't we? That's the week ahead. There's going to be some other reports coming out. There's going to be some economic data coming out, some PMI numbers from around the world. These are things that we look at as leading indicators. So stay tuned. Stay diversified, stay vigilant, and stay with the Capital News. We'll catch you here tomorrow. I am Alex Caritas. Godspeed.